Good morning, everyone. My name is Todd Cochran, and I want to welcome you to the Saturday Morning Tech Show. And we're on Google Hangout, as I had said we were going to do from time to time. And we've got Susabel is with us. Actually, I'll actually bring you guys into the screen here so that folks can see you. And so we've got Susabel. She's one of our writers, of course, at Geek News Central. And you're in, where are you at now? You're in Colorado, right?
I'm in Colorado. I'm actually in Longmont, Colorado, which is kind of a far suburb of Denver, in near the Boulder area. So I can see the mountains from my house. Kind of nice.
That's nice. And we've got Andrew Palmer. He's calling in from the UK. Exactly. Where exactly are you at, Andrew?
I'm in just south of Belfast in Northern Ireland.
Oh, okay. Nice. I tell you what I wouldn't give for some fish and chips in your neck of the woods, because no matter what you do here in the United States or where you go, it's just not the same. It does not taste the same. And I don't think there's anything you can do about it. It's just the way it kind of is, you know. But I think we're going to have some, it looks like we're going to start seeing some other people join in here. And, oh, yeah, hey, good morning, Robert. How are you this morning?
Good, Todd. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing good. We're just getting kicked off here and getting started. And as like usual, I'm rushing to try to see if I can, you know, change my gain on the camera so I'm not so bright, which I'm affecting that change now.
Yeah, I started out on the live geeknewscentral.com site, and it was feeding from Ustream again, and this morning's commercial was in Spanish.
Yeah, I think I updated that. So if you refresh, it's on the Amazon stream now. So we should be good there from that standpoint. If I missed it, then I'll have to slap myself and I guess for a better word, reprimand. I don't think so though. I think I swapped it there just before we got. But if you were in early, it hadn't updated yet.
No, I got in about 12:03, so it was just a couple minutes ago.
Well, while we're talking here, I'll go over there and check that. We don't want people to have to suffer through the the Ustream stream. And of course, I'm five thumbs right now. So I guess, you know, guys, this morning or gals, I kind of sent and. I've got a bunch of stuff here, and I think the one thing I want to start out with, though, is Susabel, you've got a topic and of something going on in your neck of the woods that I think we should talk about.
Yeah,
and maybe you can give everyone some prelude.
Yeah, we're actually in my small town, which is I think we have 87,000 people here, so we're kind of a small town, and we're having this local fight over municipal broadband. And this is our second fight at this. Of course, the first fight happened before I moved here. But basically, there's this fiber optic network that was created and buried by the city in the late 1990s and has not been used other than for some small municipal purposes. It connects the firehouses. They use it for emergency alert systems, things like that. But this network is sitting here just waiting to be used. And the idea at the time was for the city of Longmont to begin offering broadband service to the curb for all of their citizens. So that was moving along. They were working on finding a contractor. And it was kind of a slow-moving process. Of course, in the late 90s, people didn't understand, you know, the real need for this broadband to be available. And as it got into the 2000s, they went ahead and were ready to contract out. Well, in 2006, the state of Colorado passed a law saying that municipalities could not provide this service. And this was a measure that passed our legislature through heavy lobbying from Comcast and, at the time, Quest, which is the local phone service provider. They're now called CenturyLink. So basically what the law in the state said was that the towns themselves, the cities themselves, had to pass by voter a measure allowing them to use to provide municipal broadband service. So in 2009, the city of Longmont, Colorado, put a ballot measure on the ballot and attempted to pass the legislation to allow them to offer this municipal broadband. Well, at the time, Comcast and Quest came in with a lot of money, tons of money, about $245,000 worth, campaigned heavily against the measure, and it did not pass. It did not pass by a very small margin. So here it is, 2011. The city of Longmont says, look, you know, we could be using this. We could be providing this service. We could be allowing people to get a really great rate on broadband. Let's put this back on the ballot. So back it goes onto the ballot. And I heard a little inkling of it when I first moved here, but now it's really gotten out of control because Comcast and Quest, now CenturyLink, have come in and they're really spending the money. It's not even the end of October. They've already spent $274,000 campaigning against this measure. And just as a comparison, I pay about 6.9 cents a kilowatt hour for electric here because it's a city owned utility. I know this makes Todd laugh because Todd, what are you paying?
33 cents a kilowatt.
There you go. So I'm writing my little check to Quest or CenturyLink every month for $86 for my internet service and thinking, wow, if we could get municipal broadband at the same sort of pricing that we're getting our electric rates, you know, that 6.9 cents per kilowatt hour, that would be awesome because I'd be paying, what, $4.50 or something for my broadband. And I think people are a little more educated now. The newspaper has really spent a lot of effort and time promoting this. The city itself has produced some mailers and sent them out. But I will tell you, I get a mailer from the group that is funded by Quest and Comcast almost every day. Their arguments against it are, it always fails when a municipality takes over broadband, and they produce four examples of cities around the country that failed to provide it in the end. And that this will somehow remove choice. And I'm thinking, wow, one more broadband provider is not a removal of choice. It's actually an additional choice, at least according to my kindergarten math. So this is a big deal here. And I think there's some people that don't understand it. And I'm sure that's why it didn't pass the last time in 2009. I'm hopeful. We vote by mail here and by mail only. There's no polling stations. So there are people that have already voted and sent their ballots back in, obviously. And then there's those that'll wait until the last minute or whatever. But I'm actually seeing no signs on people's parking, you know, on their yard signs, you know, vote no on ballot issue 2A. I don't see any yes signs. I wish there were yes signs, but because the city's promoting this measure, of course, they can't spend a lot of money to counteract this. But I find the amount of money spent to be kind of shocking. For a town of 87,000 people. So at this point, we're at $3 a person in town for them to campaign against. And that's not 87,000 voting people. That's 87,000 people, including my 9-year-old, who obviously cannot vote. So that's a lot of money to be spent. This is a big business for them, for Comcast and Quest, to say we don't want it. GigaOM actually picked it up and did a big article about it on Tuesday. I've made a post about it on Geek News Central, and every article that gets posted on our local paper I'm reading. And so I'm interested to see what happens. We only have about a week and a half because the election's on the 1st. So I don't think we'll see early returns. We probably won't know anything until the 2nd. But yeah, I'm hopeful. I'm hoping it passes, because this, what will happen is the city will then contract with a company to provide this broadband. The city won't actually be doing any of the work as far as that's concerned, but it's still got to be cheaper. I think the cheapest Comcast here is $100 for internet and cable, so that's pretty scary.
Now, I know, Betsy, you just joined us. Good morning. We're talking tech, we're talking stuff that's been going on in the past week, and obviously Susabel is sharing with us a story that's going on in her Muni broadband area, or the Muni broadband fight. You know, I think, Susabel, my first exposure to Muni broadband was long before even high-speed internet really got popular, and it was in the town that's closest to where my mom lives. Now, my mom lives in a very rural area. The only thing she has is kind of like equivalent of 3G speeds. Luckily, that via a wireless connection. But, you know, it was ridiculously inexpensive for her internet service, and I think that town is still being serviced fiber to the curb for, You know, pennies, well, you know, dimes maybe on the dollar from what the big companies provide. And it's high speed and they get their TV. It's a triple play. And they do a great job and the community saves a lot of money. And it's only like 15,000 people in that community. So I understand the challenges in this broadband fight because, you know, there's, like you said, 80,000 people in that town. And you guys set the precedence of having a Muni broadband and Muni TV and all that. And guess what? All of a sudden, other communities across the country will wake up and say, hey, why don't we do this and help save our constituents cash? Now, do any of you others have any Muni broadband offerings in your communities or know of this other places?
No, but when broadband first became popular, we were in university housing and we had university broadband for $9 a month.
And in all honesty, that's probably about what it really cost them. You know, maybe a little more.
It's well, and the other thing here we have is that, you know, we're getting ready to lose a major plant here. Butterball has a plant here in my town that's closing at the end of the year. Nearby, within 5 miles, is an IBM complex. And you know they're getting good broadband. And one of the things our city could offer if we could get this in place is, look, we've got this fiber, this really high-end fiber. Come build your business here. There's a lot of tech industry in the Denver area, of course, but to get them to move out farther because the housing costs are lower, a lot of these people that work at the IBM plant they live here in Longmont. And so if you can offer these kinds of services at a reasonable price to these companies, you're going to get them wanting to build here because the land is cheap, the houses are cheap, you know, and here you've got this high speed, really good quality broadband for not very much. You know, that can be a big draw for a company coming in. And so, you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed and hoping for the best and hoping that this one actually does pass and come to be.
Was there any reaction by the locals on the Mashable article, or do they even know what Mashable is?
It was on GigaOhm. What I'm seeing most of the time in the articles that I'm looking at, there's a lot of commenting. We have open commenting in our newspaper website, which is, you know, good and bad. But in general, you can tell when somebody's posting on behalf of the organization that's campaigning against. And there's actually, it's a business created. Last time it was called No Blank Check. This time it's called something about where your money's going. You can tell when they post a comment on an article that it's them and versus, you know, some of us who really know what we're talking about. So, and we're getting the phone calls. I mean, everything, they're campaigning very hard against this. And it's unfortunate. It really is.
Yeah. And it's, unless you can beat that viral campaign, people, you know, sometimes they'll form opinions that are maybe not necessarily correct, but I've always said competition's good. So hopefully some success and we'll see what happens. We'll look forward to talking about this after the election and see where this thing lays. I've got a bunch of stuff in my
corporation.
Go ahead, Betsy.
Corporations never want to compete with somebody who doesn't have a profit motive.
That's true.
I mean, they talk about competition, but you know, you're not going to get one of these telecom companies they don't want to compete, period, but for sure they don't want to compete with someone who has taken the profit motive out.
Moving on to a different topic, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here because I've talked about this topic numerous times on this show on Saturday mornings with other folks, but in the biography that is going to come out next week on Steve Jobs, a portion of the interview where Isaacson talked with Steve, he says, and this is what Steve said, he very much wanted, or actually what Isaacson said, he very much wanted to do for television sets what he had done for computers, music players, and phones, make them simple and elegant. Steve Jobs says, I'd like to create an integrated television set that is completely easy to use. It would be seamlessly synced with all your devices and with iCloud. No longer would users have to fiddle with complex remotes for DVD players and cable channels. It will have the simplest user interface you can imagine. And finally, he says, I finally cracked it. So, you know, I think what that does is that probably gives us some insight into, you know, the fabled Apple TV in a true TV form that's going to be coming, I hope, in 2012. I said to someone on an email, I'm literally peeing my pants in excitement. And I really am. This is a type of thing that, I will, whatever the cost is, I will buy just because of the fact that I think he'll do the same thing for television, what he's done for mobile devices. So I just kind of wanted to just go one round with everybody and see if we can talk this through. And Andrew, what do you think about this disclosure and Steve in his final days?
I'm not too sure that it's going to be a success. I think they need to be very careful, because I do think that where Apple have gone before, they've tended to create new markets. So they created the MP3 player, they basically created the smartphone, they created the tablet. But I mean, there are a lot of good players in the TV market, and Apple traditionally only ever have one model in a product line, or a very few. Maybe, you know, the 16 meg version, the 32 meg version. But if you look at a TV range from Sony, you know, they'll maybe have 10, 20 models in the market, all catering at slightly different niches. And I just can't see Apple being up to having a 20-inch TV, 28-inch TV, a 32-inch TV, you know, all the different sizes. It's just not the space that they're in. And I think, you know, they should stick with the Apple TV as an extra box, rather than actually trying to get into the physical TV space.
Betsy, what do you think about the disclosure?
We actually gave up TV. We had never gone digital. We've always had the big, you know, huge boxes. We were paying cable bill, major cable bills. And when I lost my job, we just gave it up entirely. And we watch on the internet, or we download later, or we go to, we live in an apartment complex. We go to the community club room for stuff like the World Series. But the World Sports is the only thing we even ever watch live, and really hadn't been watching anything live until we gave up the TV.
So do you think if they came out with a device and there was offerings that weren't beyond the price range of what you could afford, do you think you guys would find that a compelling thing to potentially put on your wish list?
I don't know why we would come back.
But the thing is, I think what he's going to come up with is, I think he's going to have a TV that is going to be radically different and will be what you're watching on your computer, on your television, and do all the things that you can do on your iPad. Go ahead.
We have two laptops and a desktop. Why do I need another big screen in my house?
That's interesting. Robert, what do you think?
Well, I think if they could do like an a la carte type of television offering, if they could do it right, it might have a chance of success. They've got to compete with the Netflix and the Rokus and the Amazons doing some of that now with their instant video on demand. So I think it would be a challenge, but they basically transformed the music business single-handedly with the iPod. So if anybody could do it, they would. But on last week's show, I mentioned I've been doing a la carte TV since 2000, and I'd like an easier way to do it. So if they could provide that, I'd be really into it.
Susabel, any thoughts?
Well, this is a house of TV junkies, I guess, except for me, maybe. For me, it's the local news, which I'm pretty much addicted to. I watch local news every night and then national news every night. And then, like we were talking earlier about baseball, I'm a huge Cardinals fan. And so watching baseball is kind of a big deal for me. I'm also a huge Packers fan. So, you know, on Sundays, what I'm doing. So that kind of stuff for me is a draw, and why I still have TV. We have satellite here, which I'm very happy with. We've had satellite for 10 or 12 years. It's worked well for us. But I always say that if I ever got rid of the satellite, I'd have a huge mutiny on my hands because I have three other people in the house. And I think my husband's probably the biggest TV watcher, and he'll watch anything. He's a surfer. You know, he sits and surf. And then my little one, of course, she's nine. So it's cartoons and Nickelodeon and all that good stuff. And a top box or any kind of a integrated internet TV product comes out that can give me the same experience or give them the same experience, I don't see a shift for me. I hate paying the bill every month, that's for sure. But the happiness that it brings is worth it, because then they leave me alone and I can sit in my office and do what I want. And it, as far as the media I watch, I'm not a huge video watcher online. I listen to your podcast via audio. Always have, probably always will, because I couldn't care less about the video part. To me, the audio, I can do multiple things. You know, I can have that on and be driving. I can have that on and be vacuuming. I can have that on and be at the grocery store shopping, that kind of thing. So for me, the video experience isn't that important. And it doesn't matter what they come out with. If they can't give me the same experience, I don't see me changing at all. I just don't see it.
Now, Betsy, I think my daughter, who's 21, is more aligned with, you know, with you, in that she doesn't watch any TV. She does everything on her computer, and she's got a limited budget because, you know, she's young and just started working. And so she has to, you know, pick and choose what she spends her money on. And, you know, cell phone, her cell phone is her number one, probably, expense beyond her car.
Mine too.
And then, you know, whatever parting money she has. But the, you know, I think my thought process on this has been, and, you know, I'm going to take the opposite track. I really think that they understand that the plugging in your cable is a big part of your television experience and having access to the 1,000 channels that you have. But I also think they understand how people now are, even younger people are spending a lot more time gaming together with friends and family. And I really think that what they're going to do is they will provide, you still have the same television experience, but you're going to have the ability to seamlessly go from TV mode to, you know, basically interactive mode. And I guess the reason why I think that they'll do that in an elegant way is because they do elegant things. And the sexy factor will be huge, because, you know, whatever they build will be beautiful, number one. It'll be probably a centerpiece of people's living rooms, and people are just going to want to play and migrate to it. And that will add some sales factor. And I could see them having three models, maybe, you know, it's a lower end market, medium, and then a higher end market. But, you know, I really think, though, that the app experience, what you see in the iPad and on the iPhone and what you're doing with the Android today, you know, Google 2.0 is coming, Google TV 2.0 is coming, and this will be the first kind of figured out if people are going to, you know, the thing that's what's going against Google TV is that it's a box that plugs into another box, into a TV, and it's not on the HDMI 1 ports. People have to physically change ports or actually, if they hook it up correctly, they don't. But I'm sure a lot of people are just hooking it up into a secondary port. We'll see what happens with Google TV. But I have faith that they'll do something right. And I guess if you're listening or watching the show later, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this as well. And I don't think they'll do it unless they can do it well. I think whatever they do will be so evolutionary that it'll leave people standing with their mouths open. I just can't imagine them not going, if they're going to go that big and go into televisions, it'll have to be something remarkable. So time will tell. We'll see. And you know, it's going to have a beautiful camera in it. And, you know, that alone is going to, you know, that you just really, you don't have to have the gesture stuff on it that you have for Xbox. And I just think that it'll be big. But any final thoughts before I move on to the next topic? There's a article out from T-Mobile That's saying that they've come out publicly and said they want the iPhone, but only if it's AWS compatible. Now, AWS is the technology they use for their high speed, and the iPhone doesn't have the AWS, the Advanced Wireless Services spectrum band built into it. Now, I think I don't know if this is something where T-Mobile went to Apple and said, hey, we want the phone, but you got to have this, or did Apple just not make something available to them? And it seems odd that T-Mobile has all of a sudden said they want a phone that's AWS compatible, yet AT&T is getting ready to potentially buy them. I wonder if T-Mobile was hedging their bets that this acquisition's not going to go by and are now laying a stake in the ground saying, we want the phone. Apple, come on, make us an AWS version. So I don't know. Any thoughts? You guys follow that enough or?
No.
I'd like to see T-Mobile get the iPhone, that's for sure. But I guess for anything else, it was just a interesting tidbit for me. Go ahead, Andrew.
I was going to say, I think you're probably right. I think they probably are just trying to hedge their bets and try and remind people that AT&T is not the only game in town. But I just can't see Apple doing it for them. It's been a big enough struggle getting the CDMA versions in. So I think they're on a bit of a hiding to nothing, really.
But I tell you, the Siri component of the Apple iPhone 4S is, oh my God, it's very compelling. And I travel so much that I can see so many times I would be using it. My wife's almost have to handcuff me to keep me from going to the Apple store to pick up a updated phone, because I'm going to have to buy one out of contract, which really kind of is aggravating. Let me talk a little bit about Android here. There's a report that came out on GigaOm talking about 1 in 4 tablets from last quarter run on Android. And of course, we're going to have the Kindle coming out here, the new Kindle coming out in a couple of weeks. And I pre-ordered that. That'll be my first Android device. So are you guys using, first of all, I don't know if you have tablets or not, but if you do, do any of you have an Android tablet?
Yeah, I have a Nook Color.
You have a Nook Color. So how is that running completely? And I apologize, I don't know enough about that device. Does that run all the Android apps? Can you load stuff from the App Store?
No, it only runs the apps that you buy through Nook.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right. So is it?
It is an Android device and it is a tablet, but it's not really a full Android tablet. It's mostly an e-reader.
Right. Now, Robert, I know you do developing and stuff for different devices. What's your thoughts on the Android tablets starting to make some ground here?
Well, I have a old Arcos 5 Android tablet, which I'd used for development just to like test the different screen sizes and stuff. But they didn't have access to the Google market either, because they require you to have at least a camera, and that tablet didn't, I think, was the issue with that. And I've got a Kindle Fire on order. I'm looking forward to that. I've actually started some development in the emulator for the Kindle Fire, and that looks pretty good. It's got a little bit larger screen, not as big as the iPad, of course, but bigger than the Arcos 5, which the screen was a little bit too small for me on that tablet. It was a thicker tablet, just because of the technology at the time. So I'm really looking forward to what the Kindle can do. And it's got the same issue, but I think Amazon's got a stronger presence in order to be able to get developers to put stuff in their app store. I think there's a better chance of having some pretty decent apps in the Amazon App Store for the Kindle Fire.
I'm actually getting kind of excited to try it because, I've played with people's Android phones from time to time. And course, Angelo is our lead developer. He's a big Android user, and he's, you know, he always is, you know, we have fun discussions about talking about the iOS and Android differences, and I talk about something. Oh, the Android's had that for 2 years, and it's always kind of fun to see. So it's going to be fun to play with Android. I think there was an announcement made that the actual Android App Store, not the Kindle App Store, the Amazon App Store, but the Android App Store reached 500,000 applications or apps on it, which is pretty pretty impressive. Now, Andrew, which do you have? Which way do you roll? Are you an iOS guy? Are you an Android?
No, I have the ill-fated HP touchpad. So I have the WebOS devices, and I have to say, I think HP, huge mistake. You know, the things like the multitasking on the touchpad is just brilliant, way better than anything on both, I think, the iPhone and the Android. Though, having looked at that new ice cream sandwich, I mean, it's getting pretty slick, and you can see the hand of I forget the guy's name, but he was the developer of WebOS, and he moved over to Google. So it's definitely getting there.
Right. So,
I noticed that over here there's the RIM playbook. It's been cut in price by $150 down to about £250. So £250 seems to be the price point here that people are prepared to buy a tablet that's not an iPad. So it's interesting to see that that's beginning to happen.
I think 2 years ago, we always use CES as kind of a benchmark on where prices will be, is what the market will bear. And 2 years ago, it was $299 was the price. And as the economy continually to got worse, last year, I think we agreed on that the price point on everything was $199. It was the price point where most Americans, even if the economy was tight and they're working on a very limited budget, they could probably within a couple of months squeeze $199 out of their budget to pick up something that they'd wanted as kind of a, you know, one of those little small rewards or a want item. And it'll be curious to see this year where that price point is, because, you know, the iPads are not getting any cheaper. You know, they haven't lowered their mark on the price. So you're not going into Apple Store and picking up an iPad for $199, nowhere near that. So we'll see where this goes on the tablet front, and it'd be fun to watch. Google has decided that their Chromebooks, they're changing up their policy a little bit, and you guys know I've got a Chromebook. Matter of fact, major failure by Samsung on Chromebook support, because I've found it nearly impossible to get a new power cord from them. It's our power supply. They put a special plug on it to fit a smaller jack, and you can't buy one. And it's been very painful. So actually, I'm sending my Chromebook back. I opted to send it completely back and say I want a brand new Chromebook in lieu of getting a simple $30 power supply. It's pretty insane. But a decision made by Google has basically said that they've got this business and education plan, and they were going to let folks pay by the month, and they made a change where they're now going to allow businesses pay for the full 3 years up front. And I just wonder, the policy thing wasn't really my point that I wanted to talk about, but has anyone heard of any business buying Chromebooks for their employees? Has anyone heard of anybody doing that?
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I have.
You know, the operating system's cool, but I don't think it's far enough. And you know, it's not baked enough along. I just don't. If businesses are buying, if anyone is listening that has a business that is starting to buy Chromebooks, I'd really love to hear from you, because I just don't. I have heard nothing, and I got no feedback from anybody.
I mean, I'm really not that up to speed on it, but I mean, are there tools in there that allow businesses to control what apps people have on their Chromebooks and stuff like that?
Well, I think the manage system allows them to basically keep a set build, and then they don't have to worry about updating. You know, Google does all that, and there's no really IT. The IT guy doesn't have to come in and touch your laptop or touch your desktop to upgrade it. It just kind of automatically happens because it's just a browser, you know? So, and you know, it's not all the apps are native either. So they, you know, I've loaded a lot of apps and they'd look, oh, that's cool. They talk about this great functionality and you launch the app and it takes you to the company's website. And I'm like, well, that was a great experience. So, I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go, but time will tell on it. Has anyone else played with it? Robert, have you played with a Chromebook?
No, I haven't. I'm one that's not afraid to go against the grain on what's installed. I worked for one of the few companies in Pittsburgh that had standardized on Macs back in the 80s. And we did OS2, I'm not a big fan of running everything in the browser. If it was a Java-based operating system, you know, really optimized to run Java as opposed to a machine for Java, I'd be all over it. But not for just a browser-based, limited to just browser-based apps.
Yeah, and it does, you know, there's some things that you try to do, and you're like, okay, I want to save that file, and you're like, oh, it's no hard drive, and it's got this weird process. But yeah, I just kind of wanted to see and kind of get a pulse if anyone actually had seen that. There was an announcement on 9to5Mac that online pre-orders for iPhone 4S is now available in 22 countries, including Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Finland, Hungary, Ireland, Italy, Latvia, I think that's, I probably pronounced that wrong, Liechtenstein, Lithuania, Luxembourg, Mexico, Netherlands, Norway, Singapore, Slovakia, Slovenia, Spain, Sweden, and Switzerland. So I guess they've got enough inventory to open up to do pre-orders. So, you know, how's the, you guys got the iPhone on day one, didn't you, Andrew? Didn't you get it when it first came out?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I was just down with a friend in the office there on Friday, and he had an iPhone 4S, so he seemed pretty jazzed with it.
Did you play with Siri at all?
Yeah, we just messed around with it, and it works surprisingly well. I mean, I can see that it's really gonna, as it goes on, I can see that it will turn into that personal digital assistant that you were kind of talking about on Thursday. And you are just going to be able to say things to it and say, look, yeah, you know, direct me to the restaurant and tell my friends I'm going to be late and all that kind of stuff. There's huge potential there, huge potential.
Do you think the comments that were made by the Google lead Android developer were kind of tongue-in-cheek? Do you think he was just jealous and he said that in spite, basically saying, hey, go ahead.
I don't know. I think it will take time to evolve, but I can see that there's going to be some instances where it's not going to be helpful, but I can only see it getting better. I've tried things like Dragon Naturally Speaking, and the voice recognition even on that is very clever. But to have Apple's smarts behind it and being able to make that leap from just transcribing text into actually doing something useful, I think that's what's going to set it apart and make it a great product.
Robert, I see you smiling. Oh, we lost your audio.
Sorry, I was reading what Susabel had posted in the chat.
I missed that. So what did Susabel say in chat? I'll let Susabel, maybe is it appropriate for the show?
That was Betsy. Sorry.
I'm Betsy.
Yeah. Betsy's talking about the Chromebook.
Go ahead, Betsy. What were you going to say?
Oh, what I posted was a link to something that is, even the title is not appropriate to
Oh,
broadcast.
Yeah, and I've been to that
it's
site.
Called Siri.
Yeah, it's that site where you can go and see the weird stuff that Siri says, and it starts with doo-doo. So I actually had that Google article here somewhere. I just kind of wanted to get your guys' response to it, but that's the only thing that is compelling me to consider making the leap. And what I'll have to do is I'll have to put my iPhone 4 for sale and on eBay and sell it, you know, because I got to offset the cost here a little bit. But that's really the only thing in the phone that it really is making me go, Now the question is, why didn't they put it on the desktops? You know, why didn't they have it so it was right in OS 10? It seems like that would be the natural place for it to be.
Well, I think it's maybe not quite ready yet. You know, I mean, it's a fun toy now, and it does do some things appropriately, but it has other things that's not quite there yet. And so this is kind of a way for them, I believe, to build its value and also to build its capability by seeing how people are using it and what they're looking for. And then to kind of build a desktop app that would do more of the same, you know, because it's a new feature. It's, you know, it's kind of fun to play with. I think all the local news have just been having a ton of fun asking it questions and posting the crazy responses. And I think it's still at a sort of a toy level, a sort of let's figure it out level. And I think it can be much better at some point, but they have to have more information to work with before, you know, they can really get to a point where it can be completely useful.
If you use it within the guidelines of about the 8 topic areas that they have really done a lot of work on, you know, setting appointments, finding locations, setting reminders, there's a series of stuff that when I was playing with it, it ran 80-85% correct. Now, when I asked it weird stuff, who am I? And, you know, it comes up with a little snarky response. I kind of expect that, but if I was going to have it on my desktop, again, maybe Apple thought that they didn't want people in their cubicles talking to their computers, and having these weird conversations. Maybe they wanted to leave that to the mobile device, but I just, it kind of surprised me. And maybe it's true. Maybe you think they think it's half baked and it's not ready for the desktop. Would you like to have it on your desktop? Anybody got a Mac, want it on their desktop?
I have a MacBook. I don't think I necessarily want it on my desktop. I don't know.
Betsy, you want it on your desktop?
Our Mac is a MacBook, uh-huh. And I don't know how it would be helpful.
That's.
I mean, in other words, why not use my fingers?
Right.
What would. Now, I have a nephew who is 2 years old in France who is used to communicating with the family via Skype, and he's only 2. And whenever the computer's on, even if it's just a screensaver, he walks over to the computer, pushes the mouse, and says, Hi, Grandpa, hi, Aunt Betsy, to see if just saying that to the computer will get our picture to come up and he can talk to us.
Interesting.
I kind of feel like he at 2 is intuitively doing what will be the future.
You know, maybe Andrew, going back to the Apple TV thing, maybe what will happen is the remote will be partially voice commands from Siri. You press a button, change to TNT, or change to BBC News. Give me CNN. Give
find
me
the baseball game.
Yeah, find
if
me.
On, you don't know which channel.
Find me the Mets game. You know that's where that could be. You know, something that would make you go
Yeah, there you go. There's the thing for the Apple TV. If you speak into your Apple iPhone and control your Apple TV, that's what'll sell that Apple TV. I bet you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, it's, there's
all... Can you see the fights in the living room? You know, everyone's shouting, I want to see channel 1. No, channel 3.
Better yet.
The other thing is, how does it not hear the television? Like, when you do something with audio commands, like I find that if I do anything with audio with my phone, I have to turn off the radio.
With the Siri so far, I was playing with it in the Apple store and it was doing okay, even with that massive a number of people that were in there. But I think with the TV, you're going to have a queuing button. There's going to have to be something on the remote that you'll cue it and talk. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, you know, and I hope they put some sort of lock in there, like a dad lock channels down, dad control only code number 1234. That way the kids can't change a channel, you know, so... Who knows? But yeah, it is an interesting battle that could happen in the living room.
Isn't Android coming out with something where it's your face and not your code that's going to unlock?
Yeah, I think
that's an ice cream sandwich.
Oh, that's the ice cream sandwich?
Yeah, there was a demo during the week that didn't go that well, but I think, to be fair, it's probably to do with the bright lights on the stage. But yeah, it's instead of you having to put in a PIN number or you know, some other kind of authentication, it basically just looks at you on the camera and then says, yep, that's you, and unlocks the phone.
That's cool. Yesterday at about noon, my time here in Honolulu, if the cameras had been rolling, I let out a very long line of expletives, and it was not a endearing. I was pretty pissed off. I read that Sprint has decided to nix their unlimited from mobile broadband and hotspot plans in November. And what they have done is I've got a 3G, 4G card in a bag behind me. They're combining 3G and 4G speeds and they're saying, okay, well, sorry, we're only going to give you 5 megs. And I mean 5 gigs. We're still going to let the smartphones, we're going to let the people that just bought iPhones have unlimited data. We're not going to back out on our false advertising there. But instead, we're going to bend over and take care of everyone else that has, any type of, if you're docking your phone or docking your laptop, if you have a MiFi, if you've got a card, I'm still pissed. So this is the last hurrah for unlimited mobile broadband. And I guess we enjoyed it while the ride lasted, but now a lot of us are going to have to really sit down and figure out what we're going to do. And imagine all the people that are bought 4G cards in rural areas, and that was their primary connection of the internet, and now they're limited to 5 gigs.
Hey, you know, that what I don't understand about all of this is there's this huge media push, this huge advertising push by this unlimited, or even if it doesn't even specifically say whether you're limited or limited. Look, it's fast. It's blazing fast. How many have heard those AT&T commercials? Blazing fast. Yeah. You know, if you're going to offer the service, but then you're not going to offer us a way to get it, what's the point? I guess I don't understand why they continue to push, you know, how many billions iPhones have been sold, but yet people can't use the bandwidth. So what's the point? Why do they keep pushing buy when you can't use what you have? You know, they're not offering enough, you know, capability for it to be used. And then they're limiting what you can use. I guess I don't understand why they would continue to push something they cannot support.
Because they're more concerned with new sales than they are with retention. And they know most of us are lazy and won't switch out of something. We'll just keep track of those 5 gigs, or we'll go over and pay the extra charges. I mean, it's just like early in the days of texting and the number of calls you can make or the number of minutes used, where they offered very few and, you know, no way of telling you when you got to 80%, and made all the bulk of their money by overage charges. I mean,
they're going to charge 5 cents a meg for every meg you go over. And what the true cost of bandwidth is about, for a big carrier like Sprint, probably about 3 cents a gig. So, you know, the markup is unbelievable. Now, I understand that there is spectrum concerns, and I'm a electronics guy by background. I understand the data congestion and the issues that are out there. And I think what this is going to do is I think that the mobile providers are going to have to come up with a solution. And I think what you're going to end up finding is in the future, your mobile provider is going to give you $5 off your bill when you get your, and this is my prediction, they're going to give you a device to say, take this home and plug this into your internet, into your commercial internet. And by doing so, we're going to give you $5 a month off your bill to do that. And the way they are going to fix their broadband solution is anytime there's a phone that's close to one of these devices, it's going to connect to that and do data through it versus doing data over the air. And maybe at some point it'll drive the nationwide rollout of more, where they have more control on frequency ranges in the Wi-Fi range or the WiMAX range. I don't know what the solution is. Now, I know, Andrew, you're laughing because you guys have never had any unlimited bandwidth. Matter of fact, up to a few years ago, you guys didn't even have any unlimited bandwidth on ISPs. So you're like saying, well, join the club, right?
Well, no, I mean, quite a few people have offered unlimited on the 3G. There's a company called Three, and they were the first to bring 3G to the UK, and they've really sort of championed unlimited bandwidth. So, you know, we have had it. I mean, my contract at the moment is in theory unlimited, subject to a fair use clause, and most of them say 5 gigs is what fair use equates to. So it really just, it does depend a little bit on which service provider you're with. But my biggest complaint at the moment is that 4G won't be coming anywhere near us until 2013 at the earliest. Right. I suspect it'll be more like 2015 before we actually have 4G for real.
Yeah, because you've got a spectrum sale that isn't happening for a while, and then it'll be a couple of years to implement after that, right?
Yeah, they've got to clear the analog TV first, and they've been messing around with that since about 2008, and it won't be till this time next year that the last region here is turned off, or the analog TV is turned off. So it's only after that that they'll then have their auction and then be in a position to actually offer 4G services.
Is anybody else on the group here, or do you have a Sprint device, or is anyone else affected by this, or is this just another?
I'm on AT&T, and I'm grandfathered in with unlimited data.
Lucky you.
Yeah, we've had unlimited data since 2005, 2004. And actually, when my iPhone was stolen and I looked to see if I wanted to switch providers, there was nobody who could match the unlimited data. And I ended up staying with AT&T simply because we have it grandfathered in.
With the 3G/4G, I find that it's very hard to go over 5 gigs a month on just kind of normal usage with 3G. But when you're on 4G, it affords you the ability to stream videos and do other kinds of things. And I have a tendency to use the wireless in a much different way when I'm on 4G versus 3G. And I can see myself very easily going over 5 gigs. So
do you not set it for Wi-Fi when I'm at home or the office, I set it for Wi-Fi.
There's many times I'll go places, and like, for example, I'll be in a hotel. I travel a lot. So I'll be in a hotel, and the hotel internet is absolutely horrendous. So I'll use my wireless card, and, being an internet junkie and doing the things I do, I want good bandwidth speeds. So I actually have both a Verizon and a Sprint card, so I pay for two. It makes that big of a difference for me. So if you guys are hearing the beeping in the background, that's my UPS that needs a new battery. it's reminding me once again that I need to get it changed. But, I think that's when I use it primarily. And here in Hawaii, I live in a beautiful place, so I have a tendency to go places where I can work and have a beautiful view. And I don't always like to be constrained to the office. It just, it does the soul good to get out and even if I'm working out of a coffee shop, I'm down by the beach or something, it's nice. So I may have to curtail some of that.
Well, I know for me, the reason I don't have a smartphone is just with...
Is what? I'm sorry. I think you chopped out there.
Reason to spend any money. I just don't.
Oh.
I'm spending enough other places. I'm not going to do it, you know, through a phone.
Yeah. And I don't think I spend much money through the phone. I think that I use it for, you know, regular internet that I would do it if I was sitting in the office. So that's kind of my utilization model. Now, I don't want to get too political here, but it is kind of curious that Steve Jobs revealed to the president that you're headed for a one-term presidency when he was talking about his business offerings. And I've never heard Steve Jobs ever be political at all. So I'm just, this to me, him actually bringing this up in his book pretty much shocks me to the core, because, you know, he pretty much weighed away, you know, he's never, we don't think it, well, we've seen him at different events, and he's hung out with, Zuck has done stuff with Facebook, but I don't think Steve ever really said anything political. And not to talk about the subject of what he said, but did it surprise you guys that he actually told the president that? Or that he would have told his biographer that he told the president that? To me, it just struck me as odd.
Maybe he just wants to do the job to do the adverts.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe that was the, you know, try to drive more sales on the books. Is that what you're referring to, Andrew?
No, I think if you look at reading the story, it says that Steve offered to run adverts for, or his, yeah, create Obama's political ads for the 2012 campaign.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's about halfway down the post, I think.
Huh. Well, that's kind of, well, if they would have done, if Apple would have done the ads for them, you know, the ads would have been probably pretty good. The message would have been pretty good. They've used digital media well. You've got to hand it to the administration for doing that, irregardless of everything else. So pretty cool. Well, Microsoft had a big quarter. I think that made people upset from, not upset, but surprised, but they had their largest quarter in a long time. With $17.37 billion in revenue, with about $5.74 billion in actual profit. So the Wall Street punished them for that, which is kind of odd. And I don't fully understand why they punished them. But long story short, there is still life in Microsoft. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. And they do have this cash cow called Windows Office, and Windows 8's coming. Do you guys think that Apple has a chance in making a run long term on Microsoft?
I think they're apples and oranges. I really think they're apples and oranges. And I don't think we should be comparing them as much as we like to, as geeks say, this does this better and that does that better. We're talking about two different business models, really, in the products that they're heading towards. I mean, Microsoft is primarily software, and Apple is into hardware and software, and the experiences are completely different on those two, you know, depending which way you go. I think Apple will continue to be strong, but without Steve's innovation, who knows, you know, where that's going to go. And Microsoft really has kind of pushed themselves into a particular corner. It's operating systems and it's office production software, and that's pretty much all there is. And when you look at their big business model, that's what's driving them. If they don't continue to produce operating system upgrades, they're dead. So it is surprising that they actually are doing better, you know, starting to show some growth, which they haven't for a very long time.
I mean, I'd see Microsoft already almost becoming like the you know, they're where IBM was maybe 10, 15 years ago. I mean, their products are getting really tightly integrated and things are very slick. I mean, I've been playing around with Microsoft's Project Server 2010 and the new version of Project. And some of the stuff you can do that from a project in there, from a project management perspective, is really very cool. And we're also doing a big link rollout, and it's a unified messaging type of gig where you've got your instant messaging, you've got your voice, everything is all tied into Exchange. I mean, it really is very slick and very clever, and there's some amazing features. Really, really very impressed.
You know, I live in Project 2010. I do everything. I do all our company mapping of projects, and I'm very, I guess for a better word, anal. And it, you know, unfortunately, you throw the programmer aspect into it in Project. It's great for making adjustments when people don't make deadlines, but it is a tool that I'm. It's indispensable. It sits on the, you know, it's a quick launch in the bottom of my desktop, and I use it a lot. Now, I don't use all the Office products, but for me, I find myself with my team writing stuff in Word and then putting it up in the cloud on Google Docs because that's where they like to work. So it is kind of interesting how people, you know, and it's definitely an age factor. The younger folks like working in the cloud more than they like working on the desktop. But I don't think...
I much prefer Google Docs, except that I can't ever seem to get columns to work. And so I tend to do stuff with Word and then uploading it if I know I'm going to be using columns.
Yeah, that's me too.
Otherwise, I really like Google Docs for a lot of stuff. I like Google Docs. I'll do presentations in Google Docs. I'll do all kinds of stuff, but... There are a couple places where either I don't know how to use it or it's not there.
So, Robert, do you think that Apple will ever make inroads into Microsoft's dominance?
I don't know. I guess it's really two different, it appeals to two different types of users. So, I think the only way they're going to make inroads is you know, through the other devices, I mean, if you exclude the desktops, which I mean, you know, more people nowadays have processors in their hand than on their desk,
right?
Then you know, you could say that they already have made some pretty good inroads. I mean, that's definitely a good good approach for them to the way they've gotten into you know, the new era kind of computing, I guess.
And it's kind of funny. I've never forced my kids one way or the other into, you know, they're quite fortunate because there's enough of every operating system in the house that they can play on either. And all my kids are Mac users. They are not at all. And I think if I told my son to do something on Windows, he'd probably go in the bathroom and throw up. So it's, you know, it is kind of, it's kind of weird within my own household how and I think it's true. I think also part of it too, is that they migrate to stuff that looks cooler. So that, you know, that might be part of it. Now, I don't know if they're more productive, but at least internally, that's how I'm definitely raising Mac animals. And sadly, when I get one, he gets ready to go to college, they may be disappointed because I may have to send them off with a Windows machine just based on price point, you know, because my gosh, it's, you know, you pay such a premium for Windows, but at the same, I mean, for Macs, but at the same time, maybe I don't want the call at 2 o'clock in the morning. Dad, my computer's broke. I've got a virus because I loaded some music on from someone's USB drive. So, you know, that might be worth the extra premium, you know, at that point as well.
Well, you pay the premium up front for the Mac, but I was at work until 8 o'clock last night because we've got Windows there, of course. You know, nobody ever got fired for choosing Windows, but you know, the thing I noticed. I mean, it's two different animals. The thing I noticed about Windows is they give you so much flexibility. There's two or three ways to do things, but two out of three don't work.
Right.
So, you know, it ends up taking you three. You know, I could have left at 5 o'clock, but it took 3 extra hours to get around. And when my boss asks me to estimate how long it's going to take me to do something, I say, well, it'll take me about 4 hours plus 2 hours times the number of problems I run into. If you tell me how many problems I'm going to run into, I can estimate. You know, so anyway.
Yeah, but Robert, that's job security, right? if we have to keep fixing them, then we still have things to do.
Well, that's my theory. See, we run so lean where I work. I don't know if I should mention it or not, but
half
the people in the industry know where I work.
Okay.
My theory is that's why Microsoft does so good, because basically you've got job security for all the business partners, because it takes them longer to do stuff, and all the trading and all. I mean, there's this whole. It's a great marketing scheme, and the symbiosis between the Microsoft business partners who get more work, and then tell folks to choose Microsoft, and Microsoft does all the training and stuff. So I think it's a great business model and marketing strategy the way that Microsoft works. So you're definitely right. It's job security, and we run so lean. We try to automate everything, and it's so much easier to. I work mainly on mainframes and Unix, and it's so much easier to automate things on those platforms. And you don't have to be sitting in front of the computer clicking all the time, because you can just automate it and let it run itself, and then notify you when it fails.
Well,
I heard a story that Apple don't even have a corporate sales team. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it strikes me that it probably is.
Oh, that could be the case, and I understand, Robert, about running lean. Sometimes I get asked, how do you get done everything you get done in a day? And I'm like, because we invested heavily in automation, as an example, we took an advertising system that we had, and where I was spending literally 40 to 80 hours in creating a campaign and getting it ready and massaged and ready to launch. And we automated that down to the point where I can launch a campaign now in a couple of hours. So, the time that they spent programming that was about 3 months, but it just every time I use it, I gain a week of time back. And so I'm a true believer in automation, and you can't automate any easier in Unix than any other operating system, for sure. Just with crons and all the stuff you can do on the web is so cool. For a while there, a couple of years ago, there was a big push on net neutrality and how internet service providers were throttling on peer-to-peer news. And I talked about this on my last show, and it turns out that throttling has not went away. Clearwire in the United States is the biggest throttler. Comcast and others are only throttling about 3% of their traffic. In Great Britain, it's Tiscali and BT Group are throttling 27% of the traffic. But BSkyB is doing 5%. So there's still throttling going out there. And I think the thing that irritates me is I do a lot of legal peer-to-peer data transfers. And it just goes to show that I still think we need some net neutrality rules there that are going to prevent these guys from doing this. Obviously, it's understandable they're trying to block the copyright infringement going on. But I thought we were beyond this. I thought they promised that they wouldn't be throttling anymore. Does it surprise you guys that they're throttling?
No, actually, it doesn't. I think they're going to do what they're going to continue to do, what they think is going to solve the problem. And really, when it comes down to it, if you want something bad enough, you're going to find a way to get it. And my kids do it through SneakerNet. They know better than to load up anything that I'm going to get suspicious about. So they're pretty careful. But, that doesn't keep them from borrowing stuff from their friends. And, I think they can't stop it. So I find it amusing that they spend so much time and effort trying to stop something that's truly unstoppable. It's like me going out saying, no, it's not going to snow on Wednesday. Really? I don't have any choice. It's going to snow. I can't control it. I can't stop it. And all of the methods I may put in place aren't going to stop the fact that it's going to snow on Wednesday. And that's just the way it is. And I think efforts can be made in another direction, and they can actually make more money if they just stop messing around. I also find it odd, and have always found it odd, that the ISPs become the copyright police. What's their particular, what's in it for them? Why are they being the copyright police? I don't understand that.
Well, they've got the Safe Havens Act here in the United States, where if they're looking at content, then there's a, you know, they could lose that safe haven. I don't understand it either, but they're definitely acting as copyright police. Of course, early in the year there was the announcement of the ability for them to do this 5-step process to send warnings out to people they feel are doing copyright infringement, and they're doing that cooperatively. So I find it very very odd. But you know, it's just like my daughter last night. See, what happened here was when I got my iPhone 4 early in the year, my 3GS was sitting around and I was having a problem getting it unlocked so I could put another SIM in it. And finally, a new update came out to one of the unlocking tools. I said, hey, we finally got this build. You now can unlock. And I went in and unlocked the 3GS. And so we did a phone swap here, and my daughter got an original iPhone 1. So she has one of the original five phones, and so she was jazzed to be able to get that because it's still a perfectly good phone. It works great. And we've taken care of it and had screen protectors on it and all that stuff. But she's immediately the first day wanting the password to the Apple account. I'm not giving it to her. She's having to let me load stuff, apps on it one by one. And there's no data plan with it because it's on T-Mobile. So she can only use the stuff on Wi-Fi. But last night, I'm hearing her ask me, Dad, how do I put music on there? And I'm like, what music are you putting on the phone? And, because she doesn't normally listen to my stack of stuff that I have in my Windows Home server, because I've got a very good library of music that I like, and it's not necessarily her music. And so I kind of walked around the corner expecting to see a USB stick or something in her hands that she's, you know, sneaker netted some music, and luckily, and I'm very happy, she was actually pulling music down off of basically it from my collection. And I said, well, I thought you'd probably be getting music from your friend. She goes, Dad, you've told us for a long time not to do that. So so I kind of thought small victory on that standpoint. And I'm sure at some point there's gonna be some music she wants she can't afford, and probably they'll sneaker net it between her friends. Time will tell. We'll see how that goes. But
one of the ISPs here produced some pretty credible figures about how badly the BitTorrent users were actually impacting on the network. And they were saying, you know, they had figures, and again, can't remember it, but you know, they were saying that, you know, there's a, like, you know, 2% of the users were consuming 80% of the bandwidth.
Wow.
You know, and I can see why they would want to throttle. You know, most residential areas, we have a contention ratio. I think it's usually about 50-1. And you certainly notice that if I'm at home during the day for whatever reason, you know, I'm getting some good speeds. But as soon as people start coming home, getting on the internet, it drops off. And then, you know, come 11 o'clock at night, it all, you know, picks back up again. So I definitely think there's a problem there that needs to be solved. And, you know, at times it's easy to blame it on, you know, there being the police force for file sharing. But at times I think it's just a problem with the network. It just isn't big enough.
And also I think it's a subject or a part of it's the economy. People are out of work. They're struggling to make ends meet. You got to have some entertainment. We're such a digitally connected space to not have, you know, And I was talking about this with my mom a couple of days ago, and I've been lucky. I've been able to travel extensively throughout the world, and I've been able to see true poverty. I mean, absolute, abject, true, horrifying, proper poverty. And then come back to the United States and hear people winking about their lifestyle and just, you know, kind of shaking my head. So you have no idea how good we really have it. But because we have a great lifestyle, and it's something that we've been lucky to be able to be afforded in this country. And I'm not taking that away from that. I'm just making that as the poverty point is a kind of a comparison point. When it comes to media, we've been so connected for so long, and Oh, I'm a yes. I'm awake. I'm still here. Hangouts ask me if I'm awake. It's been so easy to get media. Then when the economy tanks and people have to cancel their cable TV because it's a $150 bill that they can't afford anymore. We've cut the cord here. My wife is aggravating me to the point of frustration and wanting cable back on. But at the same point, it's that much money back in our pocket. So we've done everything we can to get media other places. And it's very tempting to see, oh man, that's available via BitTorrent. Let's go grab it. But when the economy is bad, I think peer-to-peer is going to continue to rule the roost.
Well, I would love to see a profile of the people that are actually downloading the music off of BitTorrent, and I almost guarantee you it's young. That demographic is young, and these are the people that don't have a lot of disposable income, and all their friends are doing it, so why should they do it kind of thing. I'm pretty particular about where we get music, but I'm also cheap. You all know I'm very, very cheap, and so I'm not going to spend any money unless I have to. And so basically my teenage daughter, who still lives with us, if she wants music, has to get it. If it's not available through Amazon MP3 store, we don't get it.
Right.
That's kind of, because it's cheap, 89 cents, 99 cents. I could buy a whole album for under $10. So she knows, and she'll come to me with a list. She'll say, okay, Mom, this is what I want. This is what I want. But then, you know, when I download them on my iPod, they also end up on her iPod.
Right.
And I don't tend to listen to what she listens to for the most part. So there's, you know, really no crossover there, except that it's all being done through my iTunes account. So we get it from there. But, I would love to see the demographic. I think it's a particular type of person. I think they do tend to be young, and they think that that's a legitimate, that it's their right to do that. Whereas the rest of us kind of look at it and say, oh, you know, I'm 50. So I look at it and say, well, if I was the musician who produced this, then I know it's wrong. But when you're 20, you haven't had anything stolen from you yet. You know, you haven't produced something creative and had that stolen from you. So they may not understand it the same way that an adult does.
Betsy, I know that you and I both have cut the cord here, and I didn't necessarily do it for financial reasons. I probably could still have afforded the cable bill, but I'm telling you, it's awful nice to have that money back in my bank account each month. How are you finding your media? Are you having success in finding everything you want without having to resort to the peer-to-peer method, or do you have to go out once in a while and grab something?
I have one show that I've been unable to find online, even with commercials, even one show that I have just simply not been able to do any other way, or with the Roku hooked up. So we have a Roku, and we can hook the Roku up to an old TV that's in the bedroom. And so we do have a TV service thing.
Right.
I watch Countdown with Keith Olbermann,
mm-hmm.
and they only post maybe 5 minutes of the show for free, and you can't buy it. So it's not like a CBS show,
right,
where 24 hours later you can buy the show for a dollar.
Yep.
You know, on CBS. So we actually do use Torrent for Countdown. Don't really use it for anything else. I guess I pay per show when I watch stuff. Sports, I'm sitting in Texas as a Jets fan. There's a whole group of Jets fans that meets at a local sports bar every Sunday or Monday and watches the Jets game. And that's where I watch it.
That's cool that they will allow you to turn that Jets game on there in that sports bar in Texas. They're pretty fervent about their their football. And, when you see high school,
this is a particular bar, and they let us have the back room, and they even let us decorate it, and it's great.
That's funny.
But yeah, but there's a lot that I watch online that's just comes available 3 or 4 hours after the show comes on, and it is perfectly legal. You pay 99 cents or $1 or $1.29 for a show. And sometimes I'll watch things like that. Sometimes, you know, a lot of things I'm just watching less.
Yep. That's what we find. We're watching less. Absolutely watching less. Hey, Robert,
but
you
I do
know,
have, but, I do have one thing that I do through Torrent, and I honestly, I've tried six other ways of doing it and haven't found any way to do it and pay for it. If I found a way, if Current TV let me go on to Current and pay 99 cents to watch yesterday's show, I would do that.
Yeah, I think that's what we find too. Robert, you said you buy your stuff a la carte. How are you getting your stuff a la carte?
Well, back in September of 2000, I went digital. I've actually never had cable.
Wow, you went digital in 2000?
September of 2000, I got an RCA digital box for over-the-air digital.
Oh, okay.
What was nice was back then, even though it was only the three major networks broadcasting at that point, they didn't even broadcast the local commercials. They had other, you know, stuff in the 90 seconds where the local commercials would normally run. So there was 3 or 4 years there, didn't even have to listen to the local commercials. But I don't sleep a whole lot.
That's me too.
But I've been so busy with work and other things and side projects that I don't watch TV when it's normally scheduled. So I've been doing, I figured way back then I'd rather put the money into buying the digital TV box, and then I'll just get DVDs and catch up on the series I'm interested in. The advantage is I can watch them in order. I only watch, you only see them once. You don't wind up watching a rerun that, I've seen that episode before, but I missed the one before that kind of thing.
And right.
You also get to watch the extras. So, usually after 11 o'clock or midnight, I'll throw a DVD in, and then if I fall asleep, I can start it again the next night, it works a little bit better, better flexible schedule than watching things live. But what I'm surprised at is, like this, it's live on your side too. The things I watch live when they're on is like the Geek News Central and this, and I'll listen to No Agenda live, and there's a couple other things I'll listen to live if I happen to be in the right place at the right time. The stuff I listen to when it or watch when it's scheduled has been the stuff on the internet as opposed to the stuff on TV.
Yeah, very cool. I got one last topic. Unless someone wants to weigh in on this last topic, I've got one more topic today, and it's on the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation. They've got an article that is worth a read. I don't know how I missed this. This came out, when did it come out? 2 or 3 days ago. Says the FBI ramps up next generation ID rollout. Will you end up in the database? And nextgov.com is reporting this that this next gen identification NGI facial recognition service is going to roll out as early as January. And once it's deployed, it will have 100 million records already pre-populated, including photographs. So I guess it's going to be easier for the FBI and for the FBI and other organizations to, as we walk by a CCTV, to be tracked and to be watched. And they say that this particular database contains 31 million civil fingerprints. And of course, I'm sure mine will be in there, having be retired military. It'll probably my fingerprints will be in there. And actually, I think my DNA is on file with Uncle Sam too. And then they're going to have 70 million subjects in the criminal master file list. And up to a third of the population in the United States is already going to be pre-tracked. I just wonder, it seems like most of us get driver's licenses. So I am sure that that data will be pulled in, but I guess it won't be too long or, they're going to be able to know where we go left or right, aren't they?
They already do, I think. If you're just looking when you're walking through somewhere or driving somewhere, you'd be surprised how many cameras are really out there. And who knows where they all go? Who knows who's watching?
Well, it is it's an interesting move. And of course, you know, Andrew, you guys have been living under CCTV. You know, they've been watching you guys for a long time. I think the UK championed that, didn't they?
Yeah, we do have a lot of CCTV here. Though I don't think it, well, much as they'd like to, a lot of it isn't really joined up. You know, most of it's operated by, you know, by a council or by just a security company or whatever, in terms of just monitoring a small area. But it does get much more scarier when they start saying, well, we're going to start sharing images and pulling all the data together.
Well, I think with everything else that they're doing to track us these days, they've got a pretty good digital footprint on us. So Big Brother can watch if he wants to. If they want to watch me, they can. I'm pretty boring. I think for the most part, most of us are pretty boring, and they want to, you know, if they want to watch and, you know, knock themselves out, have a good time.
Buy shares in mask companies.
Yeah. Well, they got to come up with some sort of a spray on thing like they do for the license plates. You spray it on your face and it deflects the ability for the camera to take a picture of your face. You know, it yet to everybody else, you look normal. Cool. Have you seen those ads for the stuff that works on license plates? You can block out your license plate. I find that really amusing, but maybe they'll come up with something like that for people as well.
Well, in New York City, during demonstrations, if you wear a mask, you'll get arrested. You're not allowed to wear a mask in New York City during a demonstration, as the Occupy Wall Street people have found out. I guess they want to be able to see your picture when you do something illegal so they can identify you. So that you put a mask on
not
in New York.
Not necessarily when you do something illegal.
Well, that's true.
Not necessarily.
But you can be walking
perhaps
peacefully, right?
I mean, yeah. Right. I mean, they arrested 300 people on the bridge that day in order to get them into the database.
Yeah, it is interesting.
It's not because they were doing something illegal.
And it's true too. I agree with that. They've been arresting people. But I found it was interesting specifically that you could get arrested for wearing a mask. Now, if you're not demonstrating and you're just out and about, I guess you can wear a mask. But I guess if you're with a group of people, you can't, which is pretty ridiculous. But it's we'll see how that all turns out. All right. Well, I guess I want to thank everybody for hanging out here with me. We've been at this now about an hour and 27 minutes. So I want to kind of wrap this up. If you've been following the show, and of course, you can come over to geeknewscentral.com and check the show out. You can follow me at Geek News. Of course, you can email the show at geeknews@gmail.com. We hope that you will. And for the rest of the team that's on the call, well, we've got... Betsy's the only person. Actually, let's just go through. Andrew, you're writing, of course, at the website. Any other way they can tweet you or anything like that?
I'm Andrew H. Palmer on Twitter. I think you can probably find me on Facebook with a bit of digging. But no, if anybody wants to send emails through to me or comment on the posts, they're more than welcome.
I know Betsy's on the phone. Robert, how about you? Oh, you're muted.
Well, I most of the interaction I've done lately has been on Google Plus. I took a look at Andrew there, and need to get him to do a little more on Google Plus with us. But I've had quite a bit more success there than on the other networks. So then I have a blog which I haven't updated for a while on spitballs.com.
And Susabel, how about you?
Yeah, other than writing for Geek News Central, I have several personal blogs, including a picture blog and a personal blog called Mommalies, as in homilies, only from Mommalies' perspective. I never talk about that stuff on Geek News Central, but I've actually been a blogger for about 15 or 16 years, believe it or not. And you can always reach me through Google Plus. You can find me on Facebook. And I have my own domain name, so Susabel@Susabel.com will get to me. So you can always write to me there. And I always like talking to people, so I'm very active and very social. So that helps me quite a bit, especially since I moved. So I felt kind of lonely for a while. Not so lonely anymore, but my first couple months was a little hard. But yeah, I'm pretty easy to find. You do Susabel at almost any domain and you'll find me somewhere, you know, Gmail and Yahoo and all that good stuff. So
it's cool being a geek and getting that email address first, right?
I think I bought my domain the minute it became available. Somebody else actually owned it at some point, I think about 10 or 11, 12 years ago, something like that. And so the minute it came available, I snatched it up. It's all mine.
Cool. And Betsy, how about you? Where can they find you?
I am at relaxedpolitics.com, cool. Among other places. Actually in many places. I play it being a geek. Mostly I'm a teacher.
Nice. Very good. And I didn't hear earlier, where exactly are you in Texas?
Austin.
Oh man. Is that a pseudonym on your name, or is your name really Austin?
It is. I actually started out on Google Plus as Betsy Texas. Uh-huh. And they took me down for 24 hours and told me to change my name. And I did. I don't use my last name online.
That's fine. Well, I tell you, you live in a great city. I've said it many times to many people. If I was to live anywhere else besides Honolulu, I would live in Austin, Texas. I think Austin's a great town. Lots of great culture. Things are cool there. Big city streets. You don't have to worry about getting stuck in traffic too often, except if you're on 40 going north. It's a fun place. I really do like Austin. So I'll be in Austin first week of December, I think, is when I'm going to be out there. So if I get in town,
Adam Curry's moving to.
I heard Adam's moving out there, so I don't know when that's actually happened. I haven't listened to his show in a couple of weeks, but I heard he's making the move to Texas, and he's going to like it because he says he's going to be able to pack heat. So that's good. Well, so good on him.
You have to do a meetup if he happens to be out there at his place in December.
Yeah, his new ranch, right? It's 3, 5, 10, 108, whatever he's getting for a ranch. Everyone's got a ranch in Texas.
We have tweet ups and meetups here all the time. Yeah. All the time. Like a week does not go by that we don't have a tweet up or a meetup. We have co-working. We have all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's a fun hip city. It's a very advanced, of course, the home of South by Southwest too. So last year, and maybe I have to consider regoing, but it got kind of quirky, and I felt old at South by Southwest. I really did,
If you come back, I'll hook you up with not so young people to hang out with. And we've got the lounge, bloggers lounge, and we've got all kinds of stuff for the people who are not necessarily 20.
Yeah, it is it's a fun show, but it's one of those things where, early days of South by Southwest, you could say hi to someone and they'd really, get in this nice conversation. Now you say, hey, how you doing? Where are you from? They kind of, they're a little younger and they give you that look like, why are you talking to me? So anyway, that's here and there. Well, everyone, thanks for hanging out today, and thanks for being on Saturday Morning Tech, and everyone that's writers at GNC, thanks for the hard work you're doing. And I love what the hard work you're putting in. I definitely appreciate it. I know the audience does as well. And we'll try to do this maybe again in about a month, probably after we get back from Blog World, and really kind of see how that show goes. But I got a very, very busy week ahead of me. Matter of fact, it's going to be a full working weekend. So speaking of which, I've got an actual meeting with the guys here in about 25 minutes, and we'll go from there. But everyone else, thanks for hanging, and we'll see you next go around.
Yeah, thank you, Todd, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Raj.
Yep, take care. And I guess from Honolulu, aloha.